Anyway, money and markets. Our story of the week by hands down is media wars. We are watching media wars everywhere. One of the reasons that you see increasing level of shrieking and hysteria on all these different issues, I'm not saying some of them aren't, you know, sort of games and tricks by a variety of parties, including government. But there's no doubt that the level of shrieking and hysteria is really a battle for market share between cable, telecommunications, newspapers, TV, radio, internet. The whole media spectrum is competing, and now you're watching, competition way across platforms. So we're talking about major market share wars, and part of this is the technology, because everybody's trying to squeeze their medium into the little mobile platform. So we're all trying to squeeze in the smartphone and get the customer's attention at a time when the invasive technology means access to each customer can be more valuable, not just in terms of what you're doing with a customer, but your ability to harvest them for purposes of either selling them stuff or insider trading on a variety of different information. So in one hand, accessing and training the customer is getting more valuable. At the same time, everybody's having to squeeze into that little mobile platform. So unfortunately, it's making a lot of Americans feel, because they're getting an awful lot of attention. It makes them feel important, included, and entrained, all in very negative ways. So we have a negative feedback loop where the Orwellian nature of our media psychic storm just grows. And the psychic storm itself maintains denial by progressively noisier, more extreme stories. In the middle of the pea soup this fall, we've plopped ISIS and the Ebola stories, and they serve a variety of purposes. I went into them in detail in the last 2 weeks, particularly last week on Ebola, so I'm not going to address that again. But this week I want to add to the pea soup the Gary Webb story, which has been simmering with the release of a new movie about Webb called Kill the Messenger. Webb was a reporter for the San Jose Mercury News who broke the story in 1996 of CIA complicity in Contra drug trafficking into South Central LA, or broke the allegations. He really nailed the story and everybody knew it. He put documentation up on the web. The San Jose Mercury News, being in Silicon Valley, was sort of first with the web. And what happened was you had minority radio stations all over the country download the documents. And by the time the Washington Post and the CIA really came after Webb, along with some of the other media outlets, and were able to intimidate his editors into taking the story down, really you couldn't, Humpty Dumpty could not get put back together again because too many people had the documents. Webb then published his story in a book form called Dark Alliance. It's excellent. You can get it at all the normal bookstores. I'm sure you can get it or order it through your library. It's a remarkable book. What the movie gets into is sort of what happens and the real attack by media with the help of the CIA and their destruction of Webb. What the story never gets into in Kill the Messenger is exactly who made sure that Webb got all the documents. There was a deeper game going on. So no real illumination of who wanted Webb to get this story and what their agenda was. Webb can't tell us now because he died of 2 gunshots to the head, ruled a suicide. I ask this because it's time to ask the question of how exactly Kill the Messenger got made and distributed. And it's very important to sort of step back and look at the big media game when you look at that. Kill the Messenger is being distributed by Focus Features, which is owned by NBC Universal, headquartered at the Rockefeller Center in New York, which is owned by Comcast in Philadelphia. Now, who is Comcast? Comcast is the largest cable company in the world. It is now in the process of pushing through approvals at the Department of Justice and the FCC of a proposed merger with Time Warner. So just at the time that the largest cable company in the world is, and all cable companies, big or small, are fighting for their life right now, is trying to push this all through the antitrust division or the FCC, they just happened to come out with a movie about the Dark Alliance allegations. Now, let's go back. In 1996, when the Dark Alliance allegations rose to the fore, we just passed the the big telecommunications act, and you were just seeing an unbelievable rush for turf as they were building out the cell tower system around the country. The only thing ultimately that got the allegations off the front page, talk about shrieking and noise, was the Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton affair. And if you lived in Washington at the time, as I did, it was just, I mean, it was unbelievable. It was relentless, pounding every media all day long, all the time, nothing but sort of Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton. And which then evolved into the efforts to impeach Clinton over his related obstruction of justice. Regarding the affair. And the impeachment effort ended in 1998, but you need to understand how it stopped. The House voted to move forward with the impeachment process, and shortly thereafter, the CIA published its Inspector General investigation on the Dark Alliance allegations, which was Clinton saying, "You bring me down, and I will bring down everyone." That everyone would include most of the Republican Party, which will explain why shortly thereafter the impeachment leadership announced they would go through the process, but the president would not lose his job. It was an amazing time to be in Washington. I remember one of the witnesses to CIA drug dealing in South Central LA came to my house, and I invited over a group of attorneys and other sort of power players in Washington. And during the speech, two black helicopters came and hovered over the roof garden on my sort of mansion in the middle of Washington, which told you it was a real power salon. It was very funny to give you a sense of the perspective of all the law partners in the room. They all broke out laughing and thought it was very funny. So now we have Comcast trying hard to push through this merger. And I find it fascinating that they're distributing Kill the Messenger at the same time. During this period, we have Eric Holder suddenly resign. Remember, Holder was deeply complicit in some of the sort of narcotics trafficking and prison stuff going on in Washington at the time, and certainly has been embroiled in the Fast and Furious allegations related to the Mexican cartel drug dealing. So it's kind of, you kind of wonder, okay, what does this have to do with what's going on? And then, of course, we see Al Gore's old chief of staff, who works for a law firm that's deeply intertwined in the story, who's suddenly appointed to the Ebola czar. Now, these folks are very sensitive about the profits of genocide, whether in Africa or South Central LA. So the fact that this guy's going in as the Ebola czar makes you wonder. And I think some of the Ebola hysteria has really been to drown out the noise of the Dark Alliance allegations, you know, at a time when nobody wants to face angry voters at town hall meetings during a midterm election. It is very important to understand how many children and families in America have been destroyed by drugs, let alone the related millions incarcerated and what that has to do with it. So there's a lot of hysteria on this, and as you're watching the different games and pushback, you're seeing a lot of hysteria. Needless to say, Comcast's distribution of Kill the Messenger is also a great shot at the print media, the Post, the New York Times, and the LA Times, at a time when there's quite a lot of debate about numerous regulatory policies that drive who controls the customer, including things like net neutrality. It's interesting that we now see today the FCC suspends review of the Comcast Time Warner merger, and Judicial Watch posts exemptions claim for Fast and Furious, not only for Holder, but his wife. What's that about? And at the same time, with Monica Lewinsky drowning out the original allegations, voila, Lewinsky comes out this week and gives a speech in Philadelphia, Comcast's headquarters, home base, after a decade-long silence. So there's a very deep game going on here, and we're looking at it. We're looking through the glass darkly. We don't understand everything that's going on. It's far from over. Expect more mudslinging. So stay tuned for more media wars as everybody tries to squeeze into the little mobile platform and the, you know, the effort to cover up things coming to the surface gets more and more shrieky and Orwellian. The big story in the markets this week, as it was last week, was deflation in the oil price. And there could be a number of reasons. I'd say the second most important is the global slowdown, although I think the U.S. economy looks much stronger than most other places. I think the bigger reason, though, is a real effort to let the price drop. The price has been managed much higher than I think market economies would produce, as we've discussed many, many times with Jim Norman, the oil card. But I think the air is being let out of the price because that's going to really put the squeeze on Russia. Sure enough, we see different headlines about what's going on in Russia and the need to really support their oil companies as their revenues take a real nosedive. So oil deflation, and it's very much a part of trying to bring Russia to its knees and sort of win the dance between who's going to be the number one friend to Europe, Russia or the United States, and who's going to be the number one oil and gas producer. We're seeing tremendous lower gas prices around the country coming into the election. That's a very typical election ploy, but it's also going to help U.S. manufacturing. What's been amazing is if you look at the combination of the beating of the drum of Ebola and ISIS and lower gas prices, it's working. We have very little coverage of the elections, and many people seem to have suddenly developed amnesia about the real issues during the elections. It's kind of frightening, but there it is. In many parts of the country, and you certainly see it out here in the San Francisco area, the economy is relatively strong. People who think it's not stronger in the areas or the industries or the people who are being shut out. So, but you're seeing a lot of strength in many areas. What we're watching is the blood coming back to Empire Central as the QE ends, and we see more QE in Europe this week, but as QE ends here in the United States, the guys who are going to get squeezed, the liquidity is going to pull back from the emerging markets. Liquidity will be pulled back to protect the U.S. It's one of the reasons you see dollar going up. And as I've described before, you know, one scenario that is possible next year is a rising dollar really bear traps borrowers around the world, and the dollar just gets stronger and stronger. The stock market bounced over the last couple days, but it's been correcting. We've come down two legs. It's bouncing now. Big question, will we get a third leg? We're way overdue for a 20% correction. We've gotten about a 10 and now bouncing back from that. I think the chances for a 20% correction are very, very good. Some people are saying, is the bull over? I think it's unlikely, but anything's possible. We'll just have to see what happens. But don't be surprised if we get another leg down. You wonder, I told you I thought Ebola was a serious health issue in Nigeria, including in West Africa, including the possibility of biowarfare. But we get a headline this week from Fox News: Nigeria declared Ebola free, holds lessons for others. And you wonder, I wonder what deal they cut. Anyway, it's not so wonderful, Ebola in the United States. There is no health problem other than sort of what's the limited number of cases that have been reported. I think there is a media campaign which has multiple goals. As I said, I think shooting out the Dark Alliance is one. Unfortunately, vaccines is another. We're seeing a real push from multiple sides for vaccines. There was a big Wall Street Journal editorial last week that I mentioned last week that was just pounding the pavement as to why vaccines were so wonderful and how anybody who'd be against vaccines was basically a nut. It's just more pounding the pavement. There's a shopper discount now. You're seeing it at Walgreens, CVS, Target, a number of different places. I literally walked into the store this week. If you will get this year's flu shot, you will get 10% discount on all your purchases. There's a couple of articles up on the web saying, oh, well, that's because stores know that flu shots are so important and they want to get their sales. No, somebody cut a deal behind the scenes. You wonder what it was. Is the government putting money in their pocket? There are numerous explanations for why they want vaccines. None of them are pretty. These are all very negative. And for those of you who are with us during the swine flu squabble, you know how strongly I took a stand on opposition to a mandatory vaccine. I hope I don't have to do the same thing here, but, you know, keep an eye on this, because one thing we are going to do, it's, to me, it's an absolute safety issue, to not let mandatory vaccines get caught on at the state or federal level. But keep an eye on that. There's some great stuff on vaccines in the archives, but John Rappaport's website has a lot of great stuff on vaccines. Election. It looks like the Republicans are going to get the Senate if the election was tomorrow, but again, we got 2 weeks to go, so anything could happen. A little bit of a hullabaloo on mortgage lending standards. There is an effort across the industry to lighten them up. I wrote a commentary, everybody saying, oh no, we don't need another housing bubble. It's very important to understand the housing bubble. The problem was not lenient standards. The problem was very significant systemic fraud. Somebody said to me today, well, doesn't leaner, you know, lighter standards or more flexible standards allow them to do more fraud? Yes, but if they're all going to be run as a criminal enterprise, it doesn't really matter what your standards are. If you look at how many people are sort of upside down and because of this tight standards can't refinance or do other things, it's pretty painful. So there are a lot of good reasons legitimately to have to lighten up the standards. They always make them too tight after a bubble. So there's a commentary that I put up on the blog. You can read it there. The Vatican Library is undergoing a massive digitization project. One of the most amazing things could happen on this planet is that we get we really get access into the Vatican's library. I keep telling this to people and say, well, you know, they didn't digitize the best stuff. No, but it's a beginning. So kudos for the new pope.